Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Cambridge didn't play well in a scrappy, ill-tempered first half, but just before the break, they scored a quite crucial goal. John Taylor's flick-on, the overhead kick from Chris Ledford.
European leaders ended their summit in Rome by agreeing a blueprint for the negotiations that will shape the community's future.
After only 4 minutes of the second half, Cambridge went 2-0 up. John Taylor's header, Lee Philpott's volley. Beyond Dublin made it 3-0 just 2 minutes later. A lovely pass from Michael Cheetham. John Taylor does so well to get the cross in, and Dion Dublin does the rest.
The Prime Minister, John Major, explained it like this. We have a menu. Britain's favourite dishes are on that menu. So are others' favourite dishes. But the community has not yet decided what orders to place.
John Taylor has scored in every round of the competition so far, and in this fairy tale cup run, Taylor wasn't going to disappoint. 5-0.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me is Jonathan Wilson. And today we have with us Max Rushton, host of The Guardian's Football Weekly podcast and broadcaster extraordinaire, I'd go as far to say, Max.
Extraordinaire. I don't know if that a compliment, extraordinaire? I think I've heard that. I've heard people who you wouldn't want to be associated with
have extraordinaire put on the... Some who are in, probably in prison, aren't they?
I think it's a usefully ambiguous term.
Yeah. I mean, you could always say vanilla, easily replaceable.
Raspberry Ripple, I would go with.
Okay.
A little bit of a twist.
Okay, yeah, yeah. A bit more about me, yes.
An oldie but a goodie.
Thanks for promoting the Guardian Football Week. It's a great place. If you just want to get your fill of everything that's happened in the game, but just twice a week, because it's not quite enough for every day. I think that you don't want to fill up your feed, do you?
No.
I find that very difficult. You know, it's all, and then there's so many that you just don't listen to any of them.
This isn't going out live, Max. We can edit this out if needs be, but we might be generous to you.
Thanks for having me. And the fact that this is called Greatest Games, perhaps, you know, it's a Cambridge United-based pod. It should just be called Games.
We're flirting with the Trades Description Act today, but today's game, we go back to February 1990. Cambridge United 5, Bristol City 1. It was in the FA Cup, Max.
It was, yeah.
Why on earth have you chosen this game?
Well, I'm a Cambridge United fan.
Yep.
And I was 10, and football is at its absolute peak when you're 10, and so for those reasons I have picked probably the... I did want to pick Cambridge United 0, Cardiff City 0 in the late 90s, where David Ellery sent off three of their players, including one for deliberate handball on the line, and we drew 0-0. Because by the end of that game, the North Terrace, we were all just in... You're a Sunderland fan, you know, just fits of laughter at just how totally inept we were. And I think, in many ways, that sums up supporting a terrible football team better than a glorious victory. In fact, my favourite game, you know, the quarterfinal of the FA Cup in 91, where we lost to Arsenal at Highbury, might be my favourite game. Mm-hmm. But I thought picking a defeat for this would be a
too defeatist. Yeah.
So I draw or a defeat. There was a game at Nottingham Forest in about 2000 when they were in the Premier League, and it was the League Cup. I forget the sponsor in 2000.
That's fine.
I want to say Carling, but could have been. I mean, it was post Rumbelows, post the glory of Rumbelows, where we're 3-0 down to Nottingham Forest, and we got back to 3-2. Trevor Benjamin and Martin Butler scored, and then we had a penalty 5 minutes from time, and it's the only time I haven't been able to watch. I hadn't had dinner, so I was really terribly faint, and it was quite late. And John Taylor put the penalty home. We lost on penalties, but there's something about sort of defiantly applauding your team in defeat.
Yeah.
Like, England fans know that, don't they? You know, after semi-final defeats.
Yeah, because you don't expect to ultimately win.
No.
But the game you've chosen today was a big win. Oh. And I think this is like a little sort of half an hour or so holiday for you, just to remember Cambridge United, a big win in the FA Cup, a match that mattered. It wasn't a dead rubber towards the end of the season or anything like that. He scored 5 goals against Joe Jordan's Bristol City.
Is that who was I mean, I obviously paid no attention. I still pay no attention to oppositions, but back in the... But I remember, you know, when you were trying to get friends to come, when I was trying to get friends to come to watch Cambridge games, and I'd be like, do you want to come on Saturday? And they'd be like, who are we playing? And you, it's not going to be Brazil, is it? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be, I don't know, Morecambe. Like, it's not, who we're playing is not going to define whether you want to come to this game. So this was the fifth round, second replay.
Yes.
Which is also a great thing.
Brilliant thing. Because we'd gone to Ashton Gate, we got the coach to Ashton Gate, and I mean, supporters' coaches are—they're another, you know—they are a far end of hell. Let's face it. So we got the coach to, and it must have taken 25 years.
Well, my memory of getting Sunderland supporters' coaches in, around that time. I mean, I'm a little bit older than you, so I would have been 14, 15, going down to Tranmere and whatever from Sunderland. Was how many people on those buses made me look not nerdy?
Oh, very bitchy, Jonathan.
And can I ask? Can I ask, have you got less nerdy or more nerdy with age?
Because I hide it slightly better, but essentially I haven't changed.
Right, okay. You're exactly... It's true, actually. Like,
I dress better than I did, and my hair's not as crap as it was.
But essentially
I haven't really
every
changed.
Time I work with you, I'm working with 11-year-old Jonathan Wilson.
Yeah.
Who's got the shoot league ladders etched into his brain.
Didn't need that.
No,
could remember it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's already worked out.
Just sort of remember how many people be wearing like jeans with a terrible tracksuit top, carrying just like a carrier bag with a couple of kind of limp sandwiches. Oh,
they'd put tomato in their sandwich at 6 a.m. Yeah, and eat it at 3. And
which you can get away with if you butter both sides of bread and it absorbs the liquid. Sorry.
Ah, there you go. There's the technique.
When you were on a supporters coach, Sunderland, were you like noting down formations aged 10 or 11?
No.
When did you get struck down with the illness known as interest in tactics?
Very early. Yeah. I remember we have drifted off the point here quite a bit.
Well, I understand. It's an audience of Jonathan Wilson.
there's a Ladybird Book of Football, which is just reissued a year or two ago. And there's a page in that where it just shows, I think it's just three formations on either side. So six tactical formations laid out with Sabutio figures.
Okay.
And that was my favourite page of that book.
Did you have the Osborne Book of Soccer Tactics?
Don't think I did. Does that exist?
Oh, honestly.
The Osborne Book of Soccer Tactics?
Max, honestly, he wrote his own book of football tactics.
I'm aware of that, but no one has got part. I'm up to 107. I've got the furthest. I have the record.
Oh, is that right?
Getting the furthest through inverting the pyramid. Uh-huh. So, as we were saying.
As loathed as we are to go back to Cambridge United versus Bristol City.
But the tactics of this are quite important, right?
Absolutely. He's a pioneer, John Beck, of, you know, basically.
Let's fill in a bit of the background. Cambridge had a pretty traumatic time in the 80s. So
yes.
They were in Division 2 in 83-4 and plummeted down to Division 4.
We were in the old second division. We went down because we were not very good. And then we had a manager, Chris Turner.
Well, you had to apply for re-election and everything, didn't you? Yeah. Really struggling in Division 4.
Mm-hmm. That was before I started going.
Then Chris Turner came in. It should be said, this is Chris Turner, the former Peterborough defender, not Chris Turner, the former Sunderland goalkeeper, which really, really confused me when I was doing research.
I don't imagine the audience would have been confused by that, but I'm sure.
Well, no, because that Chris Turner, the Chris Turner who then went on to play for Manchester United, he
was in goal for Sheffield Wednesday when we beat them 4-0.
Yes, he would have been. Yeah,
in 1991.
Yeah, he left us in, I think, 85 because he had played brilliantly in a couple of the games in our run to the Milk Cup final that season. Then we got relegated. He went to Manchester United. Fergie didn't really like him, and he went off to Sheffield Wednesday. So yeah.
So Chris Turner left early 1990. We were something like 17th, 18th in Division 4, and John Beck came in, and John Beck had a very specific type of playing football.
And he'd been his assistant manager because he's a player who'd been injured and got a coaching job.
And he was a brilliant footballer, by the way. He was sort of like, he was like Pirlo of Division 4. He played for Coventry, I think, in the top division. He was a lovely ball-playing centre midfield, but he did not want his midfielders to pass the ball.
Well, I was going to say, that would have been a real rarity back then to have a midfielder like that.
Yeah. But I think in Division 4 there were always good footballers. They were just weren't.
Oh no, I've no doubt that they had they had the talent, but they especially back then with the pitches and all the rest of it and the tactic as we're just sort of coming on to. There's no way a midfielder like that is going to be indulged and say, right, play the ball to feet and all the rest of it. I mean, only now recently is that possibly.
But I think actually in that division what you had was most teams. And probably now in League Two, you know, it's mainly knock it down the channels, play percentages. Yeah. But if you can, play it short. But under John Beck as manager, there was no if you can. It was, you get it to the fullback, the fullback pings it up the line to the point where there is a video, right, after we beat Bristol City 5-1 and we're all on the pitch and the TV, you know, Look East or Anglia News are interviewing John Beck after the game. And they say, you know, how do you feel? And fans are kissing him. And we've just beaten Bristol City 5-1. We're in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup for the first time in our history. And I think his second sentence is, some of our channel balls were magnificent.
I love that, you see.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah.
So we played this quite... So in 1990, we got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. And we won the playoffs, the first ever playoffs at Wembley, to beat Chesterfield to go into Division 3. We won Division 3 the next year. And we got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup again. The following year, we came fifth in the old Division 2. At Christmas, we were top. We beat Ipswich at Portman Road, and we were top. And if we'd maintained that run, and there are a few, you know, we conceded a last-minute equaliser at St James's Park. We had a goal disallowed at Ayrton Park. And, you know, those things that didn't quite go our way, had we gone up that year, it would have been the first year of the Premier League. You know, we would have been on that advert, you know, in the gym. We'd have had one of our players.
But it's amazing to think about that, because like now, it's hard to think of Cambridge in those kind of terms. But as Jonathan said, in the 80s, Cambridge were going through an even worse time, an absolutely terrible time. So that what you're saying there, as you're saying, I'm thinking, really, did that all happen?
Well, imagine being in the Premier League. The Abbey had a capacity of, what, 9,000?
About 9 or 10, yeah. It would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Wimbledon would have laughed at us. Yeah. That's what Wimbledon would be like, we're not going here, this pitch is terrible.
We've been slightly appalled by the direct nature of the football.
Exactly. Yeah. Wimbledon would have been like, their manager, who was manager of Wimbledon then? Was it Kinnear or was it Bassett?
He would have said,
yeah, they're just very physical side. And
they out-muscled us.
But for me, I mean, I suppose what was good was I had a couple of years of watching Cambridge just be a Division 4 team and sort of getting used to going to a football match and just hearing swearing and smelling cigarettes and all those kind of things that really football was about, and learning to have the attention span to last past half time, which I don't think I've ever really...
I've lost that.
I don't think I ever had it.
What were the kind of crowds Cambridge were getting back then?
I think we were getting about 3-2-3 and then...
Just a couple of you.
I think
and then when me and my dad went, it was 5. So we were getting about that. And then I think by the time we were, you know, when we were doing well, we'd sort of get 5-6 and then it would obviously, then you'd actually get away fans when you got to Division 2. But what you had was, I don't really remember it so much because these years I was in the junior youth enclosure, but I remember when we went, when we sort of had a slight renaissance under Roy McFarlane in the late 90s. And I'd graduated to the North Terrace there. When you start doing well and other fans turn up, the sort of smug rage of fans that were going, where were you when we were shit?
Yeah.
You know, but you're singing that to someone standing next to you. It's like, be good if we had some supporters.
You're not singing it for a Champions League night down at Cambridge as well. But I mean, in Cambridge, do many of the locals support Cambridge, or is it one of those cities or towns that mainly people support other clubs from elsewhere?
I mean, it's not a footballing hotbed.
Well, clearly, yeah.
I think if you went to Cambridge Station on the morning of a game where Arsenal or Spurs were playing, you'd see a lot of people getting on the train to go there. And I...
So at school, were you one of the few Cambridge United fans?
Well, I think it was different then. I genuinely can't remember how many people really liked football.
Right.
But I think we all saw, I think we all did, but we...
But it was
there
all
weren't
about,
many of us that went.
It was all about the boat race, was it?
Yeah, that was it.
I think that's kind of like an interesting point. That kind of there's a perception issue here, right? The people think of Oxford or Cambridge and they think university and they think kind of, you know, white tie and Bullingdon Club and all that nonsense. Yeah. And actually, the cities themselves, or certainly Oxford, is not like that. I don't know. Cambridge,
they're pretty similar.
Oxford,
they're pretty similar cities. Oxford's slightly bigger, but yeah, it is sort of bullshit when you know people sing. You only sing when you're rowing because. Because actually, growing up, even though my dad was...
Because they don't sing when they're rowing.
Well, it's hard. Because you're really out of breath.
Indeed, that would be one hell of a feat, wouldn't it?
But you can imagine, back in the day, that's what they would have liked to do. But actually, you know, growing up in Cambridge, even though my dad was part of the university, I had no real concept that it existed. Mm. You know, it was just like...
Sure.
There were some nice buildings in the middle of town, but most people didn't live in those nice buildings.
Yeah, it's people so, like Jonathan go to those kind of universities.
Absolutely, and disgraceful, aren't they? You know, just the Oxbridge Mafia filling just football media.
Just because you went to the most red brick of the Oxford colleges.
Anyway.
Come along, gentlemen.
But I mean, so I remember being sent, one of my early gigs in journalism was going to a Cambridge v Oxford game, and it was sort of, the desk was built, I think I was working for the Telegraph at the time, and the desk were building it up as this sort of derby.
No interest. Yeah, we don't care about Oxford United at all. Our rivalry is Peterborough United and then maybe Luton a bit.
How dare they call themselves the posh?
Yeah.
And the only interesting thing about that game was the managers were Ramon Diaz and Claude Loire, which is the most extraordinary pair of managers at that level.
Well, of course, Harvey Renard was...
Loire's assistant, wasn't he, at the
time? It was literally the worst appointment. It's like... When you're in a relegation battle at the bottom of the football league, what you don't need is someone who's had moderate success with the Ivory Coast. It's like,
which he hadn't at the time, you know.
Well, I don't know where. I don't know. He'd been in Cameroon.
Loire had been successful.
So
anyway,
yeah.
We would drift further from a point
from the game itself.
Yeah.
But I think it was just everyone had a Premier League team as well. And, you know, I have Tottenham on my Premier League team and I'm out about that and I'm okay with the abuse that you get for that. They're my big team who win things.
Absolutely.
But in my heart is Cambridge United.
And did you get many students going to watch? I mean, obviously Nick Hornby writes about going to support Cambridge while they're a lone Arsenal fan.
I just don't know because I talked to Matthew and Clive and they were the same age as me and I didn't check for anyone's student card. I understand the question. I don't think so.
Right.
Because I don't... I just don't think it really. In fact, I don't know how many students, whatever university they go to. Maybe if you go to Manchester or you go to Leeds or something, you might go to that football club because it's a bigger part of that city. But most students arrive at university supporting their team, and that's their team, and they don't change their allegiance because of where they study.
There was 3 times I tried to go to watch Oxford play, and every time I got waylaid by a pub on the way to the game.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. All right. In the second half, we will talk about Cambridge United 5, Bristol City 1. See you in a moment.
It was time to celebrate another extraordinary night in the history of Cambridge United Football Club. Only the fourth team from Division 4 to reach the quarterfinals of the Cup. They now play Crystal Palace at the Abbey Stadium on March the 11th. Cambridge think they can win that too. Who would dare to disagree?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
John, what about these scenes?
Absolutely magnificent. We didn't play too well first half, and I can't believe how well they've played second half, and they thoroughly deserved everything they got. I don't think Cambridge United has seen this for a long time. It's sending shivers up my back now. I know, what about you?
Welcome back to Greatest Games, everybody. Right then.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier that the game finished as a draw in Bristol.
Yeah. It should have been 0-0, but
yes.
John Bailey pulled back Chris Leadbitter.
Oh.
And it was a...
Bailey, who played for Everton when they won the Cup in...
Yeah, and played for Newcastle as well, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So curly hair.
Yeah,
left
yeah.
back, yeah. He should have got a straight red and he didn't. And that was very disappointing. But 0-0 at Ashton Gate, and I think that might have been the biggest stadium I'd ever been to at that time. I was sort of wowed by the size of Ashton Gate. It was like, it was extraordinary because it was probably three times... At least twice the size of the Abbey. Because I thought
it's
the
biggest stadium in Bristol.
Well, I thought the Abbey was the biggest football ground. Because I'd been to Milton Road, see Cambridge City. So my frame of reference was biggest ground in the world, the Abbey Stadium. I mean, I'd seen Wembley on the telly.
Sure.
But that's a different... And I'd seen, you know, I'd seen Mexico 86. Mm-hmm. So I'd seen...
So you knew bigger ones were out there.
I knew bigger ones, but they were only sort of apocryphal. They weren't real.
You hadn't sampled them.
No. And so Ashton Gate, I remember thinking this was amazing. And also, we were sat so high up. That sort of blew my mind a tiny bit. And then we had the first replay, which was 0-0 after 90 minutes. And then I think we went one up. I forget which way it went, but it finished 1-1. And I distinctly remember the video footage. They tossed a coin for where the second replay would be. And
hang on. So you had 0-0.
0-0, 1-1 after extra time.
Oh, I see. I thought it was like a... Yeah, right, carry on.
In the first replay.
Yeah.
And then you have a second replay. And I remember they tossed a coin. And I remember John Beck walking into the dressing room. And I wasn't there, so I presume I've seen this. But, you know, just doing like the peace sign going, yeah, I did it. We're at the Abbey for the second replay. Well, you know, he probably did I'm really cool. Because, you know, the peace sign... So when I was at school, was just a way of saying I'm cool.
Right, okay.
It wasn't necessarily true, but...
Yes.
Anyway, I remember that, and I remember thinking, okay, we've got the second replay. And my main memory of the second replay is that I'd always go with Matthew Walsham and Clive Sanders.
Yeah.
You will know, listeners will know Matthew as someone doing a PhD in public health at Manchester University now, and Clive working for Save the Children.
Mm.
You all know. I
mean, good
everyone
eggs.
Knows that. Yeah, good eggs, good people. But Matthew had a packet of polos.
Right.
And before the game, we said, you know, how many polos are we going to get? And he said, I'll give you a polo for every goal we score.
Oh, Matthew.
Man alive.
Matthew.
He regretted that. No one was sadder about us beating them 5-1 than Matthew Walsham.
Oh, well, and shame he couldn't...
be here today.
I've no idea where he is or who he is, for that matter. But it was a good win. And so how did John Beck take to this game, Jonathan? Was it a traditional John Beck style of play?
I presume so. I mean, I've only been able to track down highlights.
I was going to say.
But it was a very, very comprehensive 3-minute package, which shows a lot of the game.
But is it the one where it then cuts to... Oh, no, the Sheffield Wednesday game is the one that Gerald Sinstat... report. I mean, this is when you're a lower league fan, the fact that Gerald Sinstat was doing your game is mind-blowing. And Dion and John Beck were invited to Match of the Day, and they're on Match of the Day after the foot. I mean, this was just like, it's otherworldly.
Dion Dublin, this is, we should.
This is Dion Dublin. So basically, we played 4-4-2 every game, and we had some very good footballers within a system. And John Beck wanted this system. I mean, there's a very famous story about Steve Claridge cutting inside from the right wing.
So he's had some players. I mean, Steve Claridge, you know,
of course,
went
on
to...
But Claridge didn't play in this game, did he?
No, Claridge didn't play in this game.
It was John Taylor playing off Dublin.
Yeah. So,
and Taylor's obviously, actually a really good player. I sort of vaguely remember from the early 90s. And he runs this game, what I can make out from the 3-minute highlights I tracked there.
So John Taylor and Dion were brilliant. No, I was saying there's a story about Steve Claridge where after 20 minutes of a game, he cut inside and John Beck subbed him because...
Shouldn't do that.
Because... The right winger is to go down the byline and cross it in, and that is it. And
so he would play wide, would he? Claridge
played wide. Sometimes he played up front. Sometimes he didn't fit the system that well. And if you read his book, he sort of says, look, they were successful in spite of Beck because they had so many really good footballers. Because Dion Dublin was obviously supremely talented, and we didn't realise at the time quite how talented. You know, he played centre back for England a couple of times. You know, like he was a really, really talented footballer.
He played up front for England, yeah.
And of course, yeah, but he could obviously read the game. John Taylor next to him was a superb footballer. We had Lee Philpott, who went to play for Leicester, on the left wing. Alan Kimball, who went on to play in the Premier League for Wimbledon.
Mm. Liam Daish, was he playing that game?
I think it would have been Chappell and O'Shea. Daish might have played, but Daish, who went on to play for Ireland. Chappell went to play for Charlton certainly in the Championship, probably in the Premier League for a bit. We had lots of very good players, but we played this system that it just took teams 2.5 years to work out, and then they worked us out, and then it was really, really bad.
Yeah. But what a 2.5 years.
Oh. And that system was pumping it down the channels.
Yeah.
Keeping the grass longer in the corners to hold the ball up.
Yeah, not just grass. I mean, sand. If you watch the Sheffield Wednesday game, which is the fifth round in the next year, it looks like a beach. I mean, it is so sandy.
Would you be able to do that nowadays and get away with it?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's perfectly okay.
For away games, John Beck used to...
You go out there with his bucket and spade.
Well, no, for away games, you got half the pitch to warm up on. So he would bring...
Would he really?
He'd bring our under-18s,
yeah,
and they'd play a full-on 11-a-side game just to rip up the pitch the game. So they play 45 minutes, absolutely hoy the pitch to
that's
shit.
That's hilarious.
Isn't it so good? And like he did loads. So when it was winter, he would put the heating on full in the away dressing
room. Oh, yeah, he's one of those ones.
He eventually moved the away dugout basically to the corner flag, right? So this was I think it was the season like 92 or something, but he moved it. So it was barely in the stadium, right?
Yeah.
He used to give the opposition flat footballs to warm up.
Shh.
What a hero.
These are marginal gains.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is quite similar to one of the, obviously, Cambridge rivals, Peterborough United's Barry Fry used to do this kind of stuff. And he was asked about this.
So you're saying there's some evil in the Fens?
I don't know who influenced who or who copied who. But I know Barry Fry said that when he looked back on his career, he wasn't sure whether it was... I mean, you know, Barry was a big character, but he said, I wasn't sure if it actually put them off and it did help us, or indeed it fired them up more and it had the reverse effect.
When I was on local radio, BBC Radio Cambridgeshire, people often talk to me about lunch with Max 12 till 2 on a Saturday afternoon in 2004. But yeah.
Can we still get hold of those?
I hope not.
All right, okay.
I used to work on the sports desk and you'd ring Barry Fry for an interview.
Yeah.
And because you were local radio, because, you know, on national media, he's like, oh, I'm big. Barry Fry, fun guy. You'd be like, ring, he'd be like, hello. He'd be like, hi, it's Max from Radio Cambridgeshire. Hang up.
Yeah.
That was it. So this whole media portrayal, I'm not having it. I'm outing Barry Fry now.
Oh, no, no.
Quite a rude man.
Classic anti-Peterborough bias from the Cambridge fan.
I was going to say, can you blame Barry? But it was more for the marginal gains that Jonathan speaks of. Or you were saying that John Beck used to indulge himself in. And
what was the cold water thing?
That was before the game. It was kind of like the pre-ice bath. It was the players would sort of come out. I don't know if it was one by one, but like, I remember it being filmed once from the waist up.
Because that's what I remember. It must have been a Football Focus or something, before one of these cup games, and the players sort of having buckets of cold water thrown over them and looking really quite unhappy that it was happening.
Well, I think it's one of those, you know, sort of like Mourinho. If you buy into, if everybody in the place buys into it, then you're on to a good thing. But as soon as a couple of people go, hang on, why are you freezing me to death? And why are you carving up the football pitch I've got to play on?
Well, I think that is an extraordinary thing, isn't it? The kind of a team who's playing, who is very close to getting into the first Premier League season.
Yeah.
And their way of playing was to negate the possibility of playing.
Yeah.
The whole thing was to stop people playing.
So when we were in the old second division, Glenn Hoddle was manager of Swindon.
Oh, and he would have hated it.
I mean, hate is not the word. I mean, like, you could see...
It's polar opposite.
He absolutely despised everything about it. And they beat us 3-0 in an FA Cup game. And I still think that's probably the high point of his whole career.
You reckon?
Probably that's the one.
Not the tournoi?
Not the tournoi, not taking to World Cup.
Well, what type of... So, John Beck, I mean, people can guess.
So, just on this... Because there was a real hatred among certain people in the game towards long ball teams.
Yes.
So there was Wimbledon, there was Watford. Watford to a lesser extent because people could... Graham Taylor had such a sort of overt decency about him. People sort of were...
Yeah.
They were very direct, but they weren't cynical in the way that Wimbledon were and Cambridge were. Mm. But Clough so hated Crystal Palace for this that there was a League Cup game when Forest played Palace and Forest were, I think, 2-0 up. And with 10 minutes to go, he took off Steve Hodge and didn't bring anybody on. Just to say, we can beat him with 10. And Steve Hodge never really forgave Clough.
He felt
as totally demeaning.
I remember, I think it was Radio 5 that just started, or 5 Live had just started. I can't remember. It was probably Radio 5. And they had all the sport. They'd just taken it from Radio 2. And they had a billboard that said, we bring you Wimbledon, Crystal Palace and Cambridge United, because after all, you don't want football every week. Right, which is actually not a terrible advert, but because obviously it mentioned there was uproar in amongst sort of the 10 Cambridge fans that they could be so rude about our football club.
Yeah.
We were. I mean, we were definitely unpopular. But the thing was, I was 10, right? I just didn't really understand. I just presumed everybody played football, or I didn't really have any concept of we were playing good or bad football at all. We were just winning every week. Mm-hmm. We were just relentlessly, we were a winning machine.
So why this game then, the 5-1?
Because it was the FA Cup fifth round, so the first time we got into the quarterfinal, because we scored some really Chris Ledbetter scores an overhead kick. I mean, he's about a yard out.
He hooks it over his shoulder. It's actually the first half is...
pretty tight.
From what I can tell from his very brief highlights, it's pretty tight. The Rob Newman heads against the inside the post. Mm-hmm. And like
John Vaughan makes a couple of great saves.
Yeah,
Not Johnny Vaughan. It's key to point out that difference.
I think people would have probably assumed. Yeah.
Is that somebody else you've stood in for at times?
Oh, almost certainly. Yeah, and then in the second half we just blow them away. So Lee Philpott scores. Lee Philpott had never kicked the ball with his right foot before this, but there's a long punt upfield, and I think
Taylor heads it on.
Taylor heads it on.
Because Taylor heads it before assisting a goal.
Right, so Taylor heads it on and Philpott absolutely larrup. It's probably, I think if you ask Cambridge fans of my generation, their favourite ever goal, it's most people pick this Lee Philpott volley. It's a right foot, pretty much the edge of the box, and it just flies in.
When it just dips, just it appears to be just going over and it dips at the right point. Yeah. And it's one of those goals, so you see it from the normal camera, sort of on the halfway line, you think, my God, that's an amazing goal. And then you see the more head-on camera, you think, oh, it's not that near the corner.
Oh, stop it now. Stop it.
But that's the kind of goal that when you're young, as you say, and you're used to seeing a certain type of football, and then you see one of those goals scored by one of your guys at your ground, you think, bloody hell, that's not too shabby.
I mean, I could have easily picked the Sheffield Wednesday game as well. Because
I was amazed you didn't, Max, to be quite
Because we beat them 4-0 and Dion scored two and Philpott scored a lovely goal. It was a lovely counter-attack.
And Wednesday would have been Premier League at the time, were they? I'd say First Division.
I think they were the old Second Division.
Were they? Okay.
But I could have picked either of those games. Because they're just absolutely hammering these teams that are in higher divisions. But we were just kind of, it almost didn't seem a surprise, because by that time, you know, when we got to the quarterfinal the second year, we were like, well, this is what we do, you know? And we were winning the league as well. So I remember going to Highbury and Arsenal were the champions. You know, George Graham v John Beck is a great, it's a footballing lesson for everyone. But Dion equalised in that game and we terrified them. We totally terrified them and could have easily have won that game. And I suppose it is, all of the stories about this are these kind of near misses, because Crystal Palace beat us in the quarterfinal in 1990.
And obviously then went on to beat Liverpool.
Exactly. And we it was a terrible game against Crystal Palace, but Geoff Thomas hit a miss hit right foot. He couldn't kick it with his right foot either. And he scored like a miss hit goal to get them through to that game. So it should have been us against Liverpool. We should have beaten Liverpool 4-3, right? And then we almost beat Arsenal at Highbury, who were
the champions.
And
Liverpool were vulnerable to the long ball by then.
Yeah.
Hansen and Hussein didn't like it up them.
No, so Dion and Shaggy would have... Shaggy's John Taylor, by the way. Dion and Shaggy would have ripped them apart. And then the whole story is basically about almost getting to the Premier League. Mm. And I think for lower league fans, you know, that's the dream, isn't it? Mm. It is never going to happen now unless some billionaire comes in. But the frustration is we had that opportunity. Now we could have, we obviously wouldn't have been in the Premier League for very long. We would have definitely not done it well. We may have eclipsed Derby County's record, but we would have beaten a good team in the Premier League.
And you'd have had those memories and what else do you want?
Exactly. Yeah. And you can look at the league table. We were asked on the pod yesterday actually about like the lingering, you know, what defeat or what moment sort of lingers with you as a football fan, and we all have them. And it is, for me, it is just looking at the Division 2 table around Christmas in 91, 92, with us top of that division. If you look at the quality of the clubs that are below us and thinking, that was our chance. I remember David Pleat or someone being at that Cambridge Ipswich game going, well, if one of these two is going to go up, it's going to be Cambridge. And just starting to believe. And then we got to the playoffs and we drew 1-1 at home to Leicester. And then Leicester hammered us 5-0 in the second leg of the playoffs. And that was kind of the moment. We sold Dion to United for $1 million.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, he scores two headers, both from Taylor crosses in the Bristol City game. Mm. And he was, I mean, presumably he was... Obviously,
are they both headers? I think he flicks it in with his right foot.
Yeah, one of them near post. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. But they're both Taylor crosses.
Yeah.
But was he obviously a cut above?
At the time, I didn't know, because I obviously didn't notice. I didn't know that he was younger than, you know, other players. I mean, John Taylor at the time was a sort of more developed footballer, so sort of seemed better. And then John Taylor, obviously, people may not know, he came back to us in the late 90s and had a sort of rebirth and became our record ever goal scorer. So I think if you ask Cambridge fans who is their bigger hero out of John Taylor and Dion, John Taylor managed us as well and it wasn't a great success, but no one cared because he was John Taylor.
And he scores the fifth goal in this game, which is a brilliant finish.
Yeah.
Because Bristol City, you know, they hit the bar as well, don't they? So Gary Shelton. So they've hit the woodwork twice.
Yeah.
Vaughan's made a couple of good saves.
Vaughan makes one Gordon Banks like save.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally it's bouncing down and he tips it up. Yeah.
And then Bristol City are clearly a little bit sort of rattled, you know, find themselves 4-0 down and they're kind of overcommitting because they still think they can get back into it because they've had all these chances. And then Taylor gets second lane through and it's a fantastic finish. I think he strikes them outside the box, but...
Did Bristol City score...
And then Bristol City scored very late on.
Yeah, and there is a great moment when Bristol City score that their striker runs in to get the ball and there's a sort of like... The John Ball went and was like, you're 5-1 down, yeah. Mate, come on, you know.
I love that.
But it is really... Actually, it's lovely to sort of nostalgically think about it because it was such an amazing time. And then years and years later in... what many people call the Soccer AM glory years.
You do literally mean yourself when you say that, don't you?
You're talking about when I used to do auto cue for Andy Goldstein.
Well, oh no, that was the time people talk about that. Yeah. How was Andy with that? Was he, you know, because I heard he was a bit of a diva. I think he recognises it.
Game recognises game, you know, and him and I got on just fine. No, he was all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on, carry on.
No, talk about the song. I just wondered.
Talk about the golden years.
No, so you know, 20 years later, Dion rang me. My phone rings and it's Dion Dublin, which is still exciting. Right, he doesn't actually ring me very often. Now he's become really successful with property. But he rang me and he said, look, I'm putting the team back together. Do you want to come and play?
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, wow, this is... And I remember going in the dressing room and they're almost just stood in order. John Vaughan, Andy Fensom, Alan Kimball, Danny O'Shea, Phil Chappell, Michael Cheetham. Cheetham, who was an absolutely brilliant right winger. I think we got him from Ipswich, but he was in the army. And he was so fast. And that was really essential to us. But just going into the dressing room and just playing football with these guys that had been your absolute heroes on a beautiful football pitch, because by now the groundsman was allowed to do
his job.
So genuinely, I think this is true. Ian Darler, who's been the Cambridge groundsman for his whole career, you know, for like the last 300 years, he got John Beck to sort of write a disclaimer to say, this pitch is not my fault. I'm a good groundsman. I know how to...
Just in case he needs to get another job elsewhere in his CV states.
I know how to make a football pitch nice. But I'm not allowed to.
That's fantastic. Well, Max.
But we should just sort of
talk about the game.
Yeah. Well, no. Finish off the stories. It all goes wrong in that that third season for Beck.
Yeah. So
you had the two quarterfinals, and then suddenly he's gone.
So that year, I think. So we had the two quarterfinals, and we had that year when we get to the playoffs to get into the Premier League, and then I think we sold Dion, and then. We did the worst ever piece of transfer business in the history of football, which was we gave Bristol Rovers John Taylor and £100,000 in return for a man called Devon White.
Ah, I remember Devon Dev. White.
Devon White, who then actually scored some goals in the Premier League for Queen's Park Rangers. But it just didn't work for Devon. And we also invested a lot of money in an electronic scoreboard, which was incredibly nice. Oh, brilliantly, we put it up. We put it up in such a place that the people in the North Territory, the diehards, couldn't even see it.
I presume the diehards were following the games if you didn't need it.
Well, possibly. I mean, you'd hope most people in the ground know the score, but you know. And I think a couple of players got injured really early in the season. Richard Wilkins, who was a very good centre mid, and a new signing, broke their legs. Like in the first game, we had two broken legs. And I think we were doing so badly that overnight, John Beck said, actually, we're going to start playing football. And the next game, Phil Chappell got the ball and he played a 10-yard side foot pass to Andy Fensom and the crowd went fucking wild. You know, like they just, there was just this sort of like ovation. For us. I think about my dad, right, who grew up watching Spurs in 50-51 and 60-61 and then had sort of introduced me to this absolute rubbish, right? But sort of quite successful rubbish. His face, I think, you know, when we actually played a pass to feet was just like extraordinary. But it just didn't work. And then I think we went down that season. I remember...
And Beck got sacked.
Beck got sacked early on. And
in October, I think.
And then we had to get a result at Upton Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Lebiter put us 1-0 up. But Kevin Bartlett, who I think... sort of came third often in the Rumbelows sprint challenge. The only thing he ever did for Cambridge was be quick enough to be offside at the far post, not interfering at all. That would never be given now. So that goal was disallowed. And then I think David Speedy and someone else scored. And West Ham beat us 2-1. They went up. We went down. And it's been malaise ever since.
Yeah. But it was nice to remember those glory years of Cambridge United.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. It was... I owe Cambridge United a huge amount.
Yeah.
Because if I hadn't...
And when are you going to pay them back that huge amount?
Well, I you say, when will I pay them back? When Richard Money was fired...
Dickie Dosh.
Yeah. Sean Derry had been on Fantasy Football, the show I did with Merce. And Sean Derry rang me the next day and said...
Come on.
What's Cambridge United like? And I went, it's all right.
Yeah.
And then the chief exec of Cambridge rang me the next day and said, what's Sean Derry like? And I went, AC, all right. And so they overlooked Chris Wilder and appointed Sean Derry.
And presumably you didn't get a cut of that deal
at all. Didn't get a cut of that.
George Mendes of Offence.
George Fendes.
And it seemed an appropriate place to finish, oddly. But Max, thank you very much for talking
to us. I've had a really nice time.
I could
do another hour on this.
I've no doubt you could.
I don't know if listeners would cope with that.
Well, we've got Honigstein coming in.
He's quite good as he knows his football as well.
Right? Well, we'll have another hour in the pub maybe after. But there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. A pleasure, Max. A pleasure, Jonathan. As always, see you next week. The Best of The Blizzard is out now. A perfect Christmas gift, I think so. 23 of our favourite pieces from the first 5 years of The Blizzard for you, friends and loved ones. Everything from Socrates and Scotland to St. Pauli and football smoking culture. Head to the shop now to buy The Best of The Blizzard at theblizzard.co.uk.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah. You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.